Getting ready to load. I'd like to welcome you all to Washington, D.C. for those that have traveled far. I live just across the river in Virginia, so I didn't have to come very far at all this morning, so that's kind of nice. And it's a real pleasure for me to be here today to talk to you about a topic that's very near and dear to my heart, and that's childhood obesity. It's something that's been in the press for a long time now, so I'm sure you all are very well aware of the problem that's out there with our children. So I'm going to just speak to you very briefly. Though this is a huge presentation, I'm going to fly through it very quickly because we're limited on time. But on the influence of elementary schools, and I chose elementary schools for a certain reason that I'm going to share with you. But as we all know, the rate or prevalence of overweight or obesity, as the press has coined, has tripled within our children from the ages of 6 to 19 over the past 30 to 40 years. The definition that I'm using is from the CDC, and it's extrapolated actually from adult data, but they're using growth curves on children, and children that are 85% or greater than with their height and weight on their growth curve is considered at risk for being overweight. And then if they're greater than 95%, they're considered overweight. CDC does not really recognize the term obesity. But again, like I said, that's the term that's coined in the press, so I'm using it throughout the presentation because of that. This is just a layperson's graphic tool that I thought was very good to help when you're talking to people. You don't always have a scale or a height measure with you, but you can ask the parents about their children. We all know about some of the long-term consequences that are associated with being overweight. Not only for the children, it's social discrimination, depression, low self-esteem, but obesity also has incidences of high blood pressure, cholesterol, type 2 diabetes, and that these all lead to precursors for premature death. This is a very busy slide, but what I want to point out here to you is, in particular, this one: annual hospital costs for children and adolescents related to overweight was $127 million during the late 90s, but that was up from $35 million during the late 1970s, so that the cost is rising dramatically. And also, schools lose between $9 to $20 a day per student who are absent. Students that are severely overweight miss approximately 9 school days per year more. And an extrapolation of these values can mean that an average school district can lose $95,000 a year, and very large districts can lose as much as $28 million a year for children that are battling with being overweight. And they also have higher administrative costs. So this is just a slide that says, you know, being overweight is a global issue. It's not just one particular problem, but I have chosen to focus on this particular area and in particular on the school environment. And I did that because schools have access to over 95% of the youth in the United States. Children spend nearly 2,000 hours and consume between 35 and 40% of their total calories at school. So it's a huge area that I feel that we have an influence to help these children. And especially you'll see from the findings, which is probably no different than what you already know, but it does solidify some of the things that are out there. But also during this time, the Institute of Medicine released a report, and their recommendation number 9 was all focused on the school environment, and that's just kind of listed here. So really, childhood obesity lays the foundation for long-term health problems. Because schools reach 95% of the school-age children, and the Institute of Medicine feels that we need to concentrate on the school environment, we need to actually have an idea of what does the school environment look like right now before we really develop interventions and go into the schools. So that's really what this study is going to be all about, is looking at presently what does the school look like, the social demographic characteristics of the school. I'm looking at playground equipment of the schools, I'm looking at the school lunches, and I'm looking at the amount of education spent teaching healthy habits for these children so that they can grow up and have good behaviors. And so that's what I hope to do, is seek the significance to establish the important rules. And I'm going after elementary schools on my particular study, and I did this Based on a conceptual framework looking at Bandura's social learning theory and Piaget's cognitive development theory. Both of these recognize that children learn new behaviors based on their respective level of cognitive behavior. And I feel if we look at the children at the very young ages, we're setting very good building blocks for the future. Both theories acknowledge the impact of the environment and how and what children learn, and schools provide a major environment for the child's learning, for role modeling. And this is just how I kind of pictured all of these theories coming together and impacting these different areas within the school. So my design, I used secondary data, and then I looked at a number of variables. Again, I'm looking at the amount of activity they spend during the school day, including the amount of time in PE and recess, their playground, their educational program. I also am looking at the relationship between the children's BMI and their academic achievement. I wanted schools to also understand perhaps how this might be impacting their learning behaviors. So I had four research questions. Does regularly eating a school purchased lunch affect a child's BMI? Among the elementary schools, are there ethnic differences in the number of children who are overweight? Does the playground physical environment affect the child's ability to be physically active? And how many hours of nutrition education does the child receive during his or her elementary school years? My sample, I had 36 elementary schools in one school district located here in Central Virginia. And clustered within each school, I chose cohorts of students in kindergarten and third grade. And I chose those two particular grades because of the way we test the children for academic achievement in Virginia at the various time points in their schooling. So I chose kindergarten and third grade. I looked, like I said, at a number of variables. They're listed here, and I won't read them all to you because you'll see them on my analysis. Again, that my secondary data. The BMI came from the county's Department of Health epidemiological report on the prevalence of overweight. It was reported for each elementary school and for kindergarten and third grade. And then I also got their social demographic variables from the U.S. Census report and the National Center for Education Statistics, as well as their academic achievement scores for third graders came also from the Department of Education and the National Center for Education Statistics. And the readiness for kindergarten information was obtained actually from the county's education office. The nutritional value of the school lunches was obtained from published school lunch menus, and I used a tool from the U.S. Department of Agriculture located at this particular website. Bus information, I really wanted to look at how much time children were spending on the buses trying to get to school. Unfortunately, they were not able to give me the information. It was we worked and worked to try to get it, but it was not provided that information. However, I was able to get the playground information from all the schools, and then I used the data collection tool just as a repository for my information. I used SPSS and GIS ArcView mapping to look at some of these variables. I did descriptive analysis, scatter plots, correlations, and multiple regression. Again, I said GIS maps. I'll show you some of these results. And then I did a nutritional analysis of a week's worth of school lunch menus and then based it on the requirements for each child. So I think it's now going to go slow. Okay. Just to compare this district county to then national from the United States, any county. This county actually had a little higher median income. It had a little lower on the poverty level, which goes along with the higher income, and they had a little higher education attainment on the bachelor's degree, 33% of the county. But ethnicity, for the white, it was about the same. However, they had a higher prevalence of black or African Americans, but lower on Hispanic, Asian, and American Indian. So, okay. This is just an overview of the schools, and that, like I said, I had 36 schools, and this is just their school boundaries. And then, my next slide is going to be, this is the description of the different schools. What I'd like to call your attention to on this particular one is 22% of the schools had kindergartners that were already considered overweight, and 25% had kindergartners that were considered at risk for being overweight. And third graders, there's 31% of the schools had students that were at risk for overweight, and another one for being overweight. The number, this is just some more statistics. The number of students that were purchasing school lunches was a little bit over a third of the school lunches, and up to 83% of one school had students on free lunch, and that was the marker I was also using for their socioeconomic status. I used, again, these are the GIS maps I generated to look at the socioeconomic status and the percent of students on free lunch. The darker the colors, the higher the percent of students on free lunch, so in these particular areas. These are the percent of students who buy lunch, which kind of goes along with, which makes sense, with students on free lunch. But you're going to see a pattern that's going to emerge from these different colors. These are the achievement scores on kindergarten. Now, I want to point out that these are failure rates. So the darker the color, the higher the percent of failure rates. And again, you can start to see a pattern with some of the schools. These are achievement scores, so in this one, the darker the color, the higher the percent of passing. The lower the color or the lighter the color, the lower the rate of passing. And again, this is the math SOL. SOL stands for Standard of Learning for third graders. And these are the percent of students overweight in kindergarten. And again, the darker the color, the higher the percent of students overweight. And then this is one for third graders. So when you look here, some of the students, some of the districts that weren't having a problem with their kindergartners were definitely having a problem with their third graders. So my research question says, regularly eating a school-purchased lunch affect a child's BMI. Here, kindergartners that are at normal weight, it was a negative relationship, so that was they were less likely to have purchased a school lunch. However, and the same held true for third graders, but both it was a high correlation for third graders who are overweight and purchasing a school lunch. Just regularly eating, again, this is the regression analysis that I did. The only factor that turned out to be significant was actually students on free lunch, or the free lunch variable. And it was a fairly high correlation of 0.77. Among elementary schools, are there ethnic differences in the number of children who are overweight? And this is the percent of students that are white. And so the darker the areas are, the higher the percent of white students. And this is the percent of the African-American students and the children, this is just looking at ethnicity here. So the areas that are dark have the higher percentage of African-American students and Hispanic students. And then looking at with the scatter plot analysis and correlation, you can see the schools with the higher percent of white students actually had less students that were overweight, so it's an inverse relationship going on. So the higher the percent of kindergartners, the lower percent of white students. And again, it's the opposite way with the African American students. There's no really big relationship, even though it was significant. You can see from scatter plot analysis that there's really not a strong relationship between Hispanic and kindergartners being overweight. Again, here are there ethnic differences in the number of children overweight? This is the same thing for third graders. And the percent of white students, it's an inverse relationship. For black students, it's a positive relationship. Hispanics, it's a little bit stronger at 0.6. So in third grade, there's a relationship between Hispanic and being overweight. The playground physical environment, I was able to look at 22 playgrounds. And out of these, what I want to show you is five of the elementary schools with the highest prevalence of overweight for third graders. One had no reported fitness area track or playground equipment. One had no fitness area or jog track. but reported having one climbing structure. However, the blacktop was in poor shape. One reported having wooden equipment that was in need of replacement, as well as their blacktop in need of repair. They had no fitness area or jog track, and they had 8 pieces of metal equipment that was not suitable for kindergartners or second graders, through second graders. And the other 2 schools I wasn't able to get a report on. But another school with moderate prevalence of overweight had no fitness, or jog track either, or really any kind of play equipment for the children. And then how many hours in nutritional education does a child receive? I found that in this district, only 5.3 hours of health education was devoted to nutritional and physical activity for the school years of kindergarten through fifth grade, which turns out to be less than 1 hour of formal education a year. So, and then again, I'm looking at academic achievement and on these particular ones, and at kindergarten, there really wasn't any relationship between being overweight and being not passing their kindergarten readiness test. But you do see that there is a little bit of a relationship going on, but it's not strong. But in third grade, it definitely is. There is a relationship between the SOL math and reading. It's a negative relationship, so there's a higher percent of students not passing the SOL when they're overweight. And that's what these slides are showing you here. The nutritional analysis of the school lunches. During the week of school lunches, now I just want to preface, this is a school lunch bought off the school lunch menus. It does not include any a la carte items. So people that have children in school lunches, you know, a la carte items are some of their favorite things and the things that they tend to eat. But these calculations do not include those items. So the average calorie ranges for a school lunch during a week range between 550 to 809 calories. And the average caloric allowance for a child 4 to 8 years old is only 1,600 calories a day. And 9 to 13 is 1,600 to 2,000, and a little bit more for the boys. So you can see the school lunches, especially for the younger age, can provide way too many calories, as well as way too much protein. The protein allotment was 16 to 35 grams a day, whereas the 4 to 8-year-olds only needed about 19 grams per day. And fat is obviously another issue. One meal can provide up to 36% of the calories coming from, 49% of the calories coming from fat, whereas children in this age group only need 25 to 35% of their calories from fat. Calcium might be one thing that's not being provided enough of, especially for the older children. So that was really interesting. And then sodium, you can see some of the meals had up to 1,212 milligrams of sodium, which is more than in a whole child's allotment for the day, especially in the younger child. So what I did find, children classified as normal weight were less likely to have purchased the school lunch in kindergarten and third grade. Children classified as overweight more likely to have purchased the school lunch in kindergarten and third grade. However, the only predictive variable was the percent of children on free lunch. So are very disadvantaged children. Are there among these specific elementary schools, there are ethnic differences. There's a strong positive association between the percent of children classified as overweight in kindergarten and third grade and the percent of African American children. And there was a negative relationship with the white students and a weak one with the Hispanic. The playground physical environment, it does seem that from the reported playground environment that they just don't have enough equipment to be out there and be active, especially, again, in our children that attend the schools that are more disadvantaged. And that the number of hours spent in education is probably not enough to have these children start off on a good foot with understanding of nutrition. So the limitations for my study are that I was not able to look at my transportation like I really wanted to as part of their physical activity. The time spent in physical activity and recess was reported to be the same in every school. However, we know there's variance there, but I couldn't get that variance. And then all the data was obtained at the school level, so my unit of measurement was actually at the school, not at the student. I had a small sample size, 36 schools, but that represented over 7,000 students, but it was only 36 schools. And so what can we do? We need to work together to develop strategies to increase the amount of time that children spend in physical activity classes, to meet the National Physical Fitness Council recommendations of 150 minutes per day, assisting nutritional services to reevaluate their meals, school personnel to make their playgrounds safe and interactive play areas, develop plans with school and transportation personnel to provide school transportation for after-school activities, which promote active physical activity and healthy eating, develop plans of instruction which increase the content and amount of time spent in learning. In Virginia, we have several, these were several bills that were going before to help promote more physical activity within the schools, more learning. However, the learning was targeted to 10th through 12th graders, and I think that's way too old to start really teaching children. And then future research, I think the amount of appropriate content or what should be the content taught, what are good instructional approaches and instruction time necessary, what are the best methods that students can use to assist students in incorporating more physical activity in the school day, and the impact of the suggested interventions would have actually on the prevalence of overweight within this group. So that's all. And I thank you very much for your time.